please stop giving away your stuff for free. If you want to build a big list, free works. If you want to make money, you should charge something. And it doesn't have to be much. And so we say that first-time offers, they need to be an impulse purchase. That means the coins in the cushion in your couch, the money in your wallet, or the B2B equivalent of that. Another way of thinking about that is if whoever you're talking to has to ask permission to spend that money, you're charging too much.
Welcome to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for solopreneurs building genuine, lasting relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. I'm your host, Candice Ridardi, and today we're joined by marketing transformation specialist, Craig Andrews. Craig is the founder of marketing agency Allies for Me. They help companies convert strangers into high-paying customers using a method that mirrors the stages of courtship. The customer value journey is a framework that guides individuals from initial contact to post-purchase. A first-time offer is comparable to a coffee date, providing a low-commitment and low-risk way to test the relationship. When executed well, prospects will ask to close the deal. This relational framework accelerates trust building, revenue generation, and strengthens customer loyalty after the purchase. Welcome, Craig.
Candice, it's such a delight to be here. Thank you for having me today.
So tell us your story. How did you become the person that you are today?
Oh, wow. That was a long and twisty road. You know, when I was in high school, I was not what the teachers called a model student. And so when I realized that my GPA would not get me into any university that anybody had ever heard of, I thought, well, let me do something different. I went in the Marine Corps for 6 years, which was really cool. That took me all over the place. And one of the last places it took me was Japan. And when I was getting out of the Marines, I actually walked down to a Japanese post office and mailed my application to go to university. My thought at the time was, I want to be creative. I want to build things and be creative. And so I thought, I'll become an engineer. And so I got a bachelor's in engineering. I got a master's in engineering. I had a dream job in engineering. And I was like incredibly bored. I was like, I discovered the hard way, the expensive way. That's not the place to go be creative. It's, you know, in many ways, an anti-creative environment. And so I left that and I still used my technical skills and I marketed chips for mobile phones. And so I've been in at least what used to be the world's biggest mobile phone makers, you know, back when it was Motorola, Ericsson, Nokia, Samsung. Samsung's still in the top five. Apple, I've been there. And that was a lot of fun. When they started asking me to fly coach to Asia, I was like, no, thank you. You know, cause I go to Asia 4 or 5 times a year. And so I thought, you know, and I did really well marketing chips for mobile phones. I thought, well, I will bring my wisdom to the masses for other products. And it's funny when I run into my colleagues from that old world and they ask me what I've been up to, I tell them I've spent the last 10 years learning how little I know about marketing.
I love it. All right. So let's talk about coffee dates. I can tell you that I built my entire business, my current business, on coffee dates.
That's awesome.
So talk to me about your system.
Yeah. So we work with people that have high ticket offers, high ticket services, usually services, sometimes products. And there's what happens so many times, I'll liken it. We look a lot at the stages of courtship. You know, so we go through these different stages of courtship. And every now and then you run across somebody who tries a move like this. They'll walk into a bar, they'll see somebody cute on the other side of the bar and say, hey, you're kind of cute. Can I have your phone number? Or what the heck, let's just get married. Well, that's inappropriate. And we don't do that because we know it's inappropriate, except I have met somebody who did that. But generally people know that that's inappropriate. But for some strange reason, when it comes to high ticket sales, that's exactly what we do. We go up and say, hi, Candace, I'm Craig. I've got a 5-figure offer that I think's perfect for you. What do you say? Let's do it. And you're like, hey, you're kind of creepy. Go away. So we think there should be a coffee date. And I'm not talking a literal coffee date. I'm talking about for us, it's usually a mini project where we come together and we help them solve some small problems. And what we found is when we do that, when we create the right environment, structure it properly in solving those small problems, we build rapid amounts of trust in a very short period. And all of a sudden they trust us to solve the big problems. But something more that's really interesting that happens when you do that, you're now the trusted insider. The other solutions look dangerous. They're scary. They're the outsiders that are unproven, that have no experience. And just gives you like an insane advantage when you're going into this. And if you're in any business that has to respond to an RFP or, proposal, it just gets you out of the proposal business. I haven't written a proposal in years.
So for you, a coffee date isn't a literal date in a coffee shop. It's a small project.
Yes.
Give me an example of what that might look like.
Yeah. So, so if you're a consultant, I'll tell you one of the ones that we do is, so we have a few first-time offers, and that's our term for these coffee dates, first-time offers. We have one where somebody's looking for help with marketing. We go in, it has five deliverables. And by the way, they always should have a minimum of three, a maximum of five deliverables. Less than three is underwhelming, more than five is overwhelming. But the first deliverable is a gap analysis where we go in and we figure out the bits and pieces that they have in place. That's really important. We don't want to come in and replicate something they already have, but we want to identify what's missing and focus on that. That's the first deliverable. The second deliverable is something we call a transformation framework. It's a messaging framework that describes the transformation that you bring to somebody's life when they buy your service or your product. And we tell people, don't sell your product or service, sell the transformation it delivers. And if you want to know who did that really exceptionally well back during the era of Steve Jobs, Apple did that exceptionally well. And that's why people waited in line to buy hours to buy an iPhone that if they just came back a week later, they could walk right in the store and buy it immediately, because Apple promised to transform your life.
Yeah. And they were really good at saying things like 1,000 songs in your pocket.
Yeah. 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 And it's funny. I learned recently that the guy who actually did the original iPod. So Steve Jobs' genius wasn't designing the iPod. His genius was hiring the guy who had that vision and already been working on it.
And that's the genius of most genius. The geniuses who become multi-billionaires, that is their number one skill set, is hiring the person that's right for the job.
Yeah. Well, somebody asked this guy, they said, how did Steve Jobs put together these presentations? And he said, he worked on it during the entire development cycle. So when they kicked off a project, Steve Jobs would come down to engineering or to another place and he'd give a version of the pitch. So when Steve Jobs stood on stage giving that pitch that just was so amazing, 1,000 songs in your pocket, he had been practicing that for a straight year before he ever got up there. That's part of why his stuff worked. The first deliverable was a gap analysis. Second deliverable is transformation framework. That's a workshop we do with somebody. Third deliverable is a message clarity test and eye tracking test. Those are both in that deliverable where, we'll look at somebody's website and we'll actually do a eye tracking analysis that will show where people look on their website. And then we'll actually put out a test and that's a simulation. Then we'll put it out to a test to real users where we run what's called a 5-second test. That's for message clarity. So we come back to let them know how clear their message is. That's the third deliverable. The fourth deliverable is what we call a conversation starter plan. So conversation starters, you've probably heard the term lead magnets. We hate that. We banished that term from my business because I think it's too mercenary. I think it puts you in the wrong mindset, makes you look at your customers as targets. And that's not how I like to think. So we call them We call downloadable content conversation starters because that's their goal. The goal is to have it start a conversation. So we give them a content plan, 6-month content plan of what the content they should be working on for the next 6 months. That's the fourth deliverable. The fifth deliverable is when they have all these things, it's easy to feel overwhelmed by all this information they now have, and they need to prioritize which they should work on next. So the fifth deliverable is a 90-day execution plan saying, over the next 90 days, you should work on this, 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 and this. And so it helps them launch and make better decisions. And so right there, there's an example of an offer that has, we say 3 to 5, that has 5 deliverables. And you see there are elements in there where we're actually helping them solve problems.
And for those 5 deliverables, I'm assuming they're not free.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So to your audience, please stop giving away your stuff for free. If you want to build a big list, free works. If you want to make money, you should charge something. And it doesn't have to be much. And so we say that first-time offers, they need to be an impulse purchase. That means the coins in the cushion in your couch, the money in your wallet, or the B2B equivalent of that. Another way of thinking about that is if whoever you're talking to has to ask permission to spend that money, you're charging too much. Mm. You know, it's you're trying to you want it to be an amount of money that nobody will ever be held accountable. You know, that they could waste that money and that would be okay.
Yeah.
And it has to deliver a disproportionate amount of value to price. So as an example, so that offer I just laid out, that's what you're getting there is a $5,000 marketing plan. And we don't offer it to everybody. You know, we get on the phone, we try to figure out if we can actually help them. To a select few, we sell that for $497.
Wow. For those 5 items, $100 an item.
Yeah.
Not bad. So yeah. Let's talk about eye tracking. I want to talk about eye tracking, and then I want to talk about conversation starters. So yeah. Eye tracking, where do people look first when they're looking at their computer screen? What are they looking at first?
It really depends upon how the page is laid out.
Really?
Yeah.
So can you manipulate that?
Well, totally. Totally. Yeah. Colors, contrast, sharp edges, you can change, you can move somebody's focal point all over the page, depending upon how you lay out the page, the colors you use, the contrast you use.
All right. Give us your secret. Give us a secret tip on that then. How do we manipulate where people look on the screen?
Well, there's not one tip. It really, I wish I could, I really do. It changes. It depends upon where somebody's starting on a website. And the I'm thinking about one we did recently. So here's an example. This one website had this little thing. So they had their headline. Right above the headline, they had this little tiny little badge that said new. And it was like some headline of some story they were trying to promote. That was getting disproportionate attention and people weren't reading the headline. And so we got rid of that little thing. We just removed that little element and it brought a lot of focus back to the headline. And so it's little things. I wish there was a clean answer for it. It really depends. But contrast, if you have something, you know, let's say you have a primarily white background, if you want to put a lot of focus on something, put it in a dark or a black, you know, have like a black section, that'll bring the eye right in there. Another thing that you can do, based on current websites, you don't see this as often, but another little trick is to have, if you're using people in your imagery on your website, have the people in the image looking at your headline. You know, so your eye goes there and it sees where they're looking, and then they look towards the headline.
That's a good tip. That's a very good tip. How do you feel about using your own photo versus other people in your marketing? Should you be using pictures of yourself, or should you be using pictures of other people?
You know, there's a couple things to think about there. One is more authenticity usually wins. You know, so if we go across the internet, I actually have a buddy here in Austin who for a while would just, he would go find random websites and he'd take a snapshot of them and put them on LinkedIn and then assign a caption to whatever he saw on there. And they were hilarious. And that's because a lot of people use what we call business porn. They go into the, you know, to the stock sites and, you know, they find somebody that's like pointing at a glass whiteboard, you know, with like light coming out of their finger. Like, sorry, if any of your listeners are hearing this, sorry, I don't mean anything bad. If that's on your website, get rid of it. Put something different. That's cliche. It's not differentiating. It'd be better to have a picture of you. We actually make heavy use of silhouettes. And that's because the our brain does a really interesting trick. The goal of marketing is to get your potential customer to visualize themselves taking whatever action it is you want them to take.
That's brilliant advice. Yeah. I don't know why I never thought of that myself. That's actually brilliant advice because you picture yourself in the silhouette.
Yes.
Brilliant. Okay. Sorry I interrupted you. I'm just, you know, I can't believe I've never thought of that. Please do continue.
Well, no, let's back that up because that hit you immediately. Let's make sure your audience is tracking along. When you see a silhouette, your brain pulls a trick on you. Your brain inserts yourself into the silhouette. Your brain also inserts yourself into stick figures.
Yeah.
The one thing your brain doesn't insert you in is somebody that doesn't look like you.
Yeah. Wow. I foresee a huge change in my web design in the future.
Yeah.
And if your ideal client is men, male silhouettes. If your ideal client is women, female silhouettes. And that way you repel the gender that you're not trying to attract.
You know, and that, Candace.
Because I'm into repel as well as attract.
No, that's, Candace, that is so awesome because I run across people that say, hey, we want to market to everyone. I'm like,
No. Go on.
No. I mean, you're right. You're so right. It's you. And one of the things we say, a message that's powerful enough to draw people towards you is also powerful enough to push others away. Mm-hmm. And the key is you just have to make sure you know who you're drawing to you and who you're pushing away. And so, yeah, you absolutely want to repel. I'm so glad you brought that up. It's so important.
Let's talk about that. So what are some, okay, attraction marketing includes repelling clients that aren't the right fit for your business model, but also maybe repelling the clients that you don't necessarily feel comfortable working with. Right. So expound on that.
So let me put in the context first time offers. And literally 2 hours ago, I sold a first time offer, sold another one Monday. One of the things I know about myself is that I don't work well with indecisive people. Mm. Not blaming them, that, you know, God bless them. You know, there's a variety of people in this world. Thankfully, not everybody's like me. I think we'd kill each other if everybody was like me. But I found that I work best with people who are decisive. So one of the things that I do when I make an offer, I put a time limit on it. This isn't some sales gimmick. This is a filter for me. If I put a insane, you know, you, when I told you what my offer was, you said, wow, right?
Yeah.
If somebody needs to go think about that offer, they're not a good client for me.
Yeah.
And so if they're not ready to buy, they never become a client. You know, this is a little bit more behind the curtain than I normally say, but if somebody turns down a first time offer, we never follow up with them. We're not trying to be mean. Or it's not that. It's just if they turn down that offer, what I found is if I tried to force it and make it work, it ends up being a bad fit.
Okay. So you never follow up with them like follow up, but what if they're on your list? You don't take them off your list.
I don't take them off my list. They get my emails that go out And what I find is over time, you know, a certain percentage of them unsubscribe, which is fine.
Yeah. You want them to.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, fundamentally, they don't buy in to the way we do things. That's, you know, that may play into one of the reasons they didn't move forward. And that's fine. Not everybody has to think like me. But no, we keep them on the list. You know, we're not, you know, nobody's banished.
Because I know that you don't want to deal with people who can't make decisions, but sometimes they're not in the right place. And 6 years later, they might be.
Yeah. And if they came back 6 years later, they say, hey, let's work together. Well, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Because at that point they're ready. But so I agree with you on the, don't waste your time on people who aren't ever going to say yes. Like, but also don't just banish them from your website because they may come back later.
Yeah. There are ways to get banished, but it's not because they said no to an offer. It's somebody that's on the banished list. We tripled their income in 18 months, and their starting number was not small. Their starting number was an 8-figure number.
Wow.
And we tripled their revenue in 18 months, and then they fired us. They're on the banished list.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's okay. It is perfectly okay to fire customers. My husband and I had a custom furniture business. We made handcrafted custom furniture, and we sold to retail stores in 25 states. We had 40 retail stores in 25 states selling our furniture. And we fired our number one customer because they took the relationship was taking too much time. And they were a huge chunk of our business. But after we fired them, we saw no loss in revenue.
Yeah. Isn't that wild?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Warren Buffett said that one of the things that's made him successful is his ability to say no.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard more recently that he said there were basically 12 decisions he's made in his career that made him who he is. You know, like 12 acquisitions. I mean, this guy's been around forever. He's looking at 12 acquisitions. I think it's 90. He's up there.
Yeah.
And over decades of his career, he says his success is based on 12 acquisitions and his ability to say no to the majority of pitches that come his way.
Let's circle back to conversation starters.
Yeah.
I love that you use that phrase. So you're a high ticket sales. Yes. So, and the most of the folks listening to this show are solopreneurs, micropreneurs, nano influencers. They don't offer a high ticket item. They have, you know, they might have their top item that's less than $10,000, but for the most part, they're looking to make connections at a smaller price point than you are. So what are some suggestions you have for solopreneurs? What can those conversation starters look like?
Yeah, I would, for conversation starters, you know, things, yeah. And when I'm saying that, I'm talking about downloadable content. Whoever your customers are, they have problems in their life. And if you can give them, you know, resources, guides, checklists, you know, there's certain structures of content that help them solve small problems and, you know, and use that. The big mistake a lot of people make, and society's gotten a lot better about this, but you know, 10 years ago, if you downloaded something from a website, it was a piece of sales literature. You know, it's like, here's how our solution will make your life better. Like, I'm just trying to figure out how to do this. And so the sales literature isn't working as well. What does work well is, like one of our conversation starters is a guide on how to build a first-time offer. And it's not salesy at all. It says, hey, we spent a lot of time and energy figuring this out. You don't need to make the same mistakes I made. Here's some the big things to look for.
And that's available to the Gratitude Geek audience through a link that you provided, correct?
I did. So the link is our website, alliesforme.com. That's spelled A-L-L-I-E-S, the number four, M-E.com, and then /gratitudegeek, all one word, all lowercase.
And that link will be in the show notes. So if you can't remember what that is or you're driving right now, just go to the show notes later at gratitudegeek.com and look for this episode, and the link will be there.
Yeah, so they get the guide. They also get 23 days access to a course that we have, self-paced course on how to build first-time offers. The reason we're limiting it to 23 days is very simply, we want you to do it. And I've signed up for free courses. They're sitting on some dusty shelf somewhere that I've never looked at since I signed up for them.
I can't tell you how many of those free courses and free downloads are sitting in a box, a folder on my hard drive that I've never opened.
Right. Well, we want to change lives. I want people's lives to change. I want to change the way sales is done. And so we found that when we put this limit on there, people actually engage. And we see it in the analytics. So that's why there's the 23-day limit. That gives you plenty of time to get through the course. But it also gives you a sense of urgency to say, because it's too easy to say, oh, life is busy, I'll do it next week. Oh, really? Like next week's less busy than this week? Not my world. You know, and it just helps create that structure.
I don't like lead magnets at all. So my freebie is a 45-minute class every Thursday that's just available. Anybody can come join it and have fun with us. Thursdays at 11 o'clock Eastern, momgeek.com/coffee. Just come and hang out. We do DIY marketing and I teach people different things and I have guest trainers. So that's my freebie because that's I don't like downloads. Right. Yeah. I don't download them and I don't want to download anybody's stuff. So why would I make somebody download my stuff? What are some other ideas for giveaways that maybe aren't necessarily the standard checklist and without having to give away your time in a manner that isn't like you could give away a free 20-minute coaching session, but that's giving away your time. So is there anything outside the box you can think of other than that?
You know, when I've looked at it, they always fall into a few categories. The, it's checklist, it's guides, it's self-assessments, people talk about swipe files where, you know, hey, here's this, you know, email sequence that works wonderfully. Some things like that. Those are good things. We have one, here's one. Doesn't get used that much, but when it does, it's a really wonderful thing. So we've done a lot of work with financial advisors. And so in the process of digging into that, we found that there are 9 personas of high net worth investors. This wasn't our research. This was someone else's research. And it turns out the financial advisor will work really well with 3 of those 9 personas. There are 3 of those 9 personas that they will work horribly with. And if they want to make the most money for themselves, they should be able to identify the 2 or 3 personas they work best with. And so we have, but this is under the thing of an assessment, you know, that on our website, we have something where in 10 minutes, they can do this little self-assessment and then they'll get an email from us with their profile showing who they should work with, who they should avoid, and the traits that help them most with particular, you know, help them serve different financial advisors. So like the number one persona, 34% of the high net worth investors are family stewards. Their primary goal is to create a financial legacy for their kids and grandkids. The number two persona, 17%, is a independent. Their primary goal is to be able to get to the point where they can walk into work one day and tell the boss to shove it. Well, those are obviously much, much different needs. And if you're a financial advisor just saying, hey, we're going to help you grow your wealth, that doesn't really speak to either of those personas. And so, you know, so that's an example of something where we don't charge for it. They can do this assessment and it will help them find the language to and speak to the unique needs of the people they work best with.
If you're trying to create generational wealth for your family, you can't be too risky, get a little safer. But if you want to say screw you to your job, you might want to take a few more risks so that you can do it faster.
Yeah.
That's completely different ways of looking at it. How interesting. That's some interesting information too. 34% of investors are just trying to build generational wealth for their family.
34% of high net worth.
High net worth. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Not all investors, high net worth. Interesting. 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 All right.
Yeah, so, guess who the financial advisors want to work with? The guys with the high net worth.
Of course. Of course they do. Of course they do. Because there's no money in helping the little guy, right?
Yeah.
So if you are the financial advisor who wants to help the little guy, help a whole bunch of them, it's good for you too. And good for, I have thoughts. I have thoughts on why it's important to also help the people who have very little money, because they need to have generational wealth too. And you have to start somewhere, right? I'm a real big fan of investing in other people's real estate, passive real estate investment, I guess is what it's called. But you know, if there's a real estate investor who's buying houses, fixing them up and selling them and is looking for investors in the purchase, that's a great way to invest your money for a fast return. Right. And you don't have to do anything because the investor's doing all the work, or the people doing the rehab are doing all the work. You're just giving them a little bit of money and getting a little bit back. Right.
Yeah.
You know? And in this market, it's guaranteed income. You know? So there's ways to make money that aren't just the stock market and knowing the right people. And that comes back to coffee conversations.
Yep.
Right? Coffee conversations. I actually have a real estate investor in my network, and I didn't know how to refer people to him. I didn't know how to refer. I mean, because he's looking for people to give him $20,000 for 6 months, you know, for 10% interest. I didn't know how to refer that. And then I told somebody what he did, and she said, I want to be introduced to him because I want to do that. And I was like, oh, this is easier than I thought. You know, it's easier than I thought. So now I'm like, who else could benefit from making, you know, a little bit of money with very little risk, right? So now it's a lot easier for me to refer to him. So, okay. So coffee conversations, when you're talking about those quote unquote conversation starters that used to be lead magnets, but they're also, I mean, you're also building a relationship. So you can call that coffee conversations if you want, but it's, you have to build a relationship. So talk about that.
Yeah. So the, well, so, you know, what we call conversation starters, their goal, their mission is just to initiate the conversation. And that where the real, and when you do that, the content that works best is the content that's really trying to help people. You know, that's not trying to sell them, that's really trying to help people. But our ultimate goal is to get somebody to the point that says, hey, can we jump on a call? I think you can help me solve a problem in my life. And it's at that point that we have, that's where we have actually the coffee date, which is this offer, this first time offer where we work on something together. And that's really where the trust building happens. And the, you know, there are a lot of elements that go into that. And I don't want to, you know, I don't want to oversimplify that, because I found that leaving some of those out, you know, does not yield the results. But if I were to focus on one, it's, you really have to help somebody solve a problem, help them solve a small problem. When you help them solve a small problem in their life, it immediately builds trust. It builds trust at speeds that will shock you. And when you help them solve that small problem, all of a sudden, they trust you to go solve the big problem. And so that's really, that's the whole part in the process where we really see the biggest jump in trust occur. You know, the conversation starters, the downloadable content, that's just kind of the intro. Think of that as like a singles mixer. You're going there and you're trying to make nice conversation and be interesting enough that they will go on a coffee date with you.
I'm trying to wrap my head around your language because it's different than mine. So what comes after the coffee date? Let's just take this whole dating process to marriage and divorce. No.
Yeah. So if we were to break down the stages, you have an introduction. Then you have conversation, which is what we call the conversation starters. Then you have coffee. And, you know, think about that coffee date. It's where you take all the risk out. You know, so think about, you know, when you go on a coffee date, it's because you hope for bigger and better things. But there's still a lot of uncertainty. So you both drive there separately. You probably don't know each other's address yet. What the ladies tell me is they have a girlfriend call in like 15 or 20 minutes to see if they need a rescue. And they, you know, and then you leave. And if it goes well, then you say, hey, you know what, we should, you know, we should do more of this. Sometimes it doesn't go well. And it's, you know, you just realize, you know what, you're a nice person, but we're not nice to, you know, we're not fabulous together. You're more fabulous without me than you are with me. And so it doesn't advance. But some of those move to, then you start going out for dinner. That's something we call an excite to escalate offer. That you need, if you're, instead of going to like a five-figure offer, if you're going to like a six or a seven-figure offer, then you need this extra stage. You know, we call it excite to escalate. And it's a lot like a first-time offer, that coffee date offer, in terms of delivering disproportionate value and what have you. And then you have introduction, you have conversation, you have coffee, you have dinner, and then you have commitment. And that's commitments where they buy your core offer.
Awesome. I like that analogy. It's fun. And the goal is to just take people through the stages. I have a similar, I call my marketing technique a sales colander, where you put your ideal clients in a colander and then you rinse them with goodness and love and all sorts of fun stuff, which is, you know, your newsletter and greeting cards, and you just keep rinsing them. And eventually the clients that aren't a good fit will slip through the cracks in the colander. And the one, all that's left in the colander are the juicy good clients, the ones that are there for the premium offer.
Yeah.
So, and because I don't like the idea of a funnel. Funnels. Yeah. And I know that the visual of a funnel isn't necessarily what a funnel means. I just don't like the whole concept. A friend of mine said cows get funneled to their death. And once I heard that, I was like, never again am I going to think about the sales process as a funnel.
No, I get that. I get that.
You know, okay. So it's getting close to the time where we need to wrap up. I would love to hear what your favorite marketing tool, tip, or technique is. And I know we've talked about a lot of marketing, so it's going to be hard.
Yeah. Favorite tool, technique, or tip. My tool would be HubSpot. And, you know, that's probably an expensive tool for a lot of your audience, but
I have a free version.
Yeah, but you know what? HubSpot Starter, this is like the best deal out there by far. So HubSpot's pro version, that which is where they really want to have everybody, that's expensive. It's really good. I like it. I've used other, you know, CRMs and marketing automation. I really like HubSpot. But the starter version, for $50 a month, you get a CRM, you get a marketing platform. You get a CMS, which I use a CMS actually for landing pages as opposed to core website. You get a service tool that they have. You know, you get a number of things. And that's probably the best deal I know of for a marketing tool on the internet. And so if you're not happy with your CRM or you don't have one, that's kind of a no-brainer. It's like $50. It's not much. You get tons of function, tons of value out of it.
I didn't realize you could do marketing through it.
Yeah. So they, you know, on the marketing tool, they have, you can send a whole bunch, you know, it can be your email service. So it can replace like MailChimp or Constant Contact. But it also has landing pages. So you can capture leads, and I understand that's not your thing, but if it is, that's there.
Just because it's not my thing doesn't mean it's not others' piece. And I do capture leads because you have to register to attend my free class. Now I have true. You as a lead.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, so you have landing pages, so you can capture those leads. I'll say this: the landing pages that the limitations they put on the starter version of HubSpot marketing, I don't like their landing pages. But what's bizarre is in this bundle, they also include the CMS, which has the tools that are available in the pro version of most of the tools that are available in the pro version. So what I do is if I have somebody that's just using the, you know, them not ready to move to pro, I get them to get the starter version and we do their landing pages in the CMS. And that does, and it gives all the functionality that most people need. And then when somebody fills out a form, they actually have some simple automation built in where you can enroll somebody into an automation where they get an email every several days. They, you know, you get tasks assigned to you, just different things like that. So it's actually an amazing value for $50.
Interesting. I haven't looked at HubSpot in a long time because I use HoneyBook. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of tools out there, and it's a matter of finding the one that's right for you and the one that has the features. And if you can roll in your email marketing into your CMS instead of having two separate systems, that's a time saver.
Yeah.
You know, so cool. All right. This is your moment of gratitude. For whom or what are you most grateful?
I am most grateful for my wife. You know, we didn't talk about this much, but, you know, a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago, I walked into the hospital and I could barely breathe. And 12 days later, they shot me up full morphine and they called her in the middle of the night and said, "Hey, we want to put your husband on the ventilator." And this was Delta variant of COVID. And the basic thing was, if you got Delta variant and you went on the ventilator, you died. That was the outcome. As a matter of fact, I was the first person to leave the ICU alive. And my wife was amazing throughout the whole process. You know, so this is when the hospitals were saying family couldn't visit. Well, I've got pictures of my wife standing over me when I'm on the ventilator. She said, "Wrong answer, I'm coming in." And I didn't think I'd be here if it weren't for her.
Thanks for tuning in to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast for solopreneurs building genuine, lasting relationships with clients, colleagues, and community. Make sure to visit gratitudegeek.com for the show notes, where you can find links to all the groovy resources we've mentioned, including ways to connect with our guest, Craig Andrews. If you love this episode, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on Audible, iTunes, Good Pods, or your preferred podcast player so you never miss an episode. Our theme music is track 14 by Rev Brock and Solily. I'm your host, Candace Ridardi, reminding you that gratitude is like manure. It's just a pile of poo until you spread it around. Stay groovy, my friends.
Stay grooving, my friends. I know we can make